Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Ultra Hope Girls, a Danganronpa podcast today. Long awaited, but trust me, it was worth the wait, my friends.
At long last.
At long last, we are talking about chapter 3 of Danganronpa V3. Wow. Are we ready for this wild ride and this roller coaster? I don't think you're ready. And because of this theme, we have a little surprise in store for you today. So keep listening to find out what that is. Just a heads up that this episode will spoil
V3, chapter 3.
Nice. And with that, let's get into it.
I'm Maddie.
I'm Marin.
And I'm Caroline. And we are the Ultra Hope Girls.
At last, young guide dog and little lost girl sealed within an iron cage. At mountain's bottom, within the darkness, at last, at long last, how many will there be by dawn? Will there be two or just one? Will the
I'm really early on that last line.
We could just keep going from Will the Guard Dog.
I honestly think the mess ups will make it better.
Okay. So we can just... Okay, Will. I will keep this in. Okay.
Will... Okay, all right, good.
Okay, what's the note? Will Guard.
Will Guard.
Okay, ready?
Yeah. Will the guard dog run the little girl?
Wait, I lost the lyrics.
It's Will Guard Dog. Run far away.
Will Guard Dog run far away. Yeah, okay. I got you.
Okay, I'll do it again.
Okay.
Round two.
Wait. Okay, yes.
Okay.
Will the guard dog run far away? Or did it eat the little girl at last, at long last?
Wow. Guys.
Well, you heard it here, folks.
We were choir kids before we were Ultra Hope Girls. So we just had to go back to our roots for this one. Welcome, everyone, to the Seesaw chapter. We have been waiting for you and for this. Just kidding. If I could go without talking about this chapter, it's a little questionable, but it's okay. We love it. Maddie's got a sneeze. Okay.
I just had to like clear my throat really aggressively. Sorry. Okay.
You're good.
I'm good now.
All right. Where do we even begin? Well, I guess we should start at the very beginning. A very good place to start, yeah.
Just a heads up reminder, listeners, that the first part of this episode is going to contain spoilers for just what we talked about in the intro, and then we'll give it a warning when we're spoiling the entirety of the entire series. I forgot to say that earlier, so now I have said that.
Now they know.
Now they know.
We begin with a little newscast.
We do. A little meteor shower. It's just a little one. Just a little one.
Just a little one. What did you all make of that? When you first watched it, I mean, I kind of like had the idea of like that there was clearly something wrong within the greater world, I guess, at this point in the game. And so like this sort of confirmed that. It felt very like Ultra Despair Girls, like, you know, apocalyptic vibes. But yeah, what do y'all think?
What I was wondering was that newscast something that was happening like at the same time as these folks are in the killing game, or was it in the past, or is it even in the future? Like, no, probably not. But that's what I was wondering. It's just like we don't know anything about the chronology of those events, so it's hard to see how it all connects.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The only
that's a good point. And yeah,
the only note I have is Chicken Little vibes. I don't know if you guys ever watched that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if it was before or during, then these students have a significant problem, right? If they're on the same planet, because like, I don't know if you've ever watched those science-y videos where it's like, what would happen if a meteor the size of what we're seeing in that newscast hit the Earth? But it's like devastating. Yes. Like,
it's really bad.
It's pretty awful. So it's either not happened yet, or if it did happen already, then we're in a rebuild of the same world, or we've moved to a different planet. Nod to what I was really on about in our last chapter. But yeah.
Yes. Okay. And I do want to, I might touch on this a little bit later, not now, but I do want to touch on that theory, because this chapter is the chapter where I started agreeing with that theory of thinking they were no longer on Earth. More along the lines of the meteor shower. I cannot remember the name of this movie now. I have to look it up because it just occurred to me this isn't even in my notes. But
wait, I want to guess. Is it a meteor end of the world type movie? Give me a decade.
Yes. it just came out like a couple years ago.
Was it the comedic one with like Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio? Oh,
Don't Look Up.
Yes. Don't Look Up. Yes. Excellent. Have you guys seen that movie?
Yeah, so good.
We should really play like movie. Taboo or something together. We would crush.
I know. We'd be really good at Taboo. That next Patreon party, Taboo. I'm in, baby. Oh, Danganronpa Taboo. I'm on it. And now that Maddie's done,
so
we can have a game night. Maybe we should try to do one in June. Okay, yeah. Sorry. Become a patron, everybody, to be part of our game nights. Lowest tier is just $2 a month. But game nights, I think, are the $10 tier.
This is true.
Check it out.
Do you guys think that if they actually did find that a meteor was headed toward us and going to kill us within like 10 years, that they would just keep a secret from us?
I do.
I kind of do think that.
Yeah.
Because the thing is in 10 years, they could figure out a way to like fix it. And so why cause the public panic? Hi, Ziggy. Why cause the public panic when it's not necessary? You know, like I kind of am okay with not knowing. like don't tell me.
Too. I'd rather not. I'd rather just live my life and like pretend, you know, because it's kind of like I'd rather like, this is getting off such a tangent. It's like the idea of like, oh, would you want to know like exactly when or how you die? It's like, no, I absolutely would not. I would like it to be completely unexpected, ideally. Like if I'm gonna get hit by a bus tomorrow, I don't want to know about it. I want tomorrow to be as normal of a day as possible. I don't want to ruin it with the knowledge of
Shall we reorient back to perhaps Danganronpa?
Yes, we should. Yes, that I got off such a tangent thinking about meteors,
it's all good.
Space.
So then we have a little bit of a Monocub rebellion. The Monocubs are in their teen years now. They are angsty and ready to rebel, I guess. That is weird. I don't know what's up with Monodome. I don't really know. Yeah, what's going on?
She says, "We will not do what you say." And when he said that, I audibly was like, "Oh." It was like monotone like delivery from Monodome, and I was just like,
"We will not do what you say."
I know, but then Monokuma always has the power in the end. You know, he always has a plan. So, you know, but
And oh my gosh, okay, so this is a dermatology reference. I'm so sorry, listeners. I just want you to know I'm running on 3 hours of sleep. Please forgive me, because this is not my brain is not here today. Dermatology reference. Monokuma, when he appears and he looks like he has like the chunks of hair like ripped out of him, all I could think was like, oh my god, Monokuma has alopecia areata.
Oh my god.
Which, for those of you who do not know, it is an autoimmune disorder where your immune system attacks your hair follicles and you get random patches of hair loss. That's all that it is. And so I saw Monokuma with random patches of hair loss and I was like, boom, alopecia areata.
There you go.
Get him some interlesional Kenalog. Stat.
I think we were all thinking that.
We all were. We're on the same page here. Obviously.
I feel like everyone in games one and two were way, way, way more comfortable with Monokuma at this point. I'm saying if that's right or wrong, but like in games one and two, we got to chapter three and he'd pop up and they'd be like, "Oh man, he's back." And in this one, he pops up and they literally scream like all the time, every time he pops up. And I'm wondering, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess there's more Monokubs and there's Monokuma, but like, is there any other reason you guys can think of why they haven't made like the Monokuma adjustment?
The Monokuma adjustment.
The Monokuma adjustment. I think I don't know. Part of me thinks maybe it's just because of the Monokubs, because everything, the dynamic between all of them is just so bizarre and uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, also like the personalities in this game are, I feel, a little more prone to like the dramatic, I would say. So it could be that too.
True.
Yeah. I also think, I'm pretty sure, and Maddie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure me and you played this chapter together at your house during 2020. Yeah. So Maddie and I experienced this together at the same time.
This and chapter four.
And chapter four, which we'll get to.
We will later. Get to.
Oh, yes, I could never forget that, playing chapter four with Maddie in particular.
My next note, Caroline, I think you might know what my next note is about. Unless you guys have anything else to say about the...
Oh, I know what your next note is about.
Spirit, Praise, and Beauty, folks. That is the best Danganronpa soundtrack track ever made. It is, and just so y'all know, when Caroline and I were playing this together at my house during the pandemic, we would play this song very loud in my family room and like dance around to it weirdly. And my stepdad made fun of us, and my mom made fun of us.
But it was so good. I mean,
it was good.
It is just, listen, this may save this chapter for me because it is, in fact, such a banger. Like every time I was like, yeah, seesaw, you know, it's like, all right, yeah, like let's do it. No, anyway, it is such a bop. I have been waiting for this day. I think we referenced this song in the first episode of our podcast. So like, yes, we love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also think the title might be a reference to the three people who die in this chapter, because Spirit, Praise, and Beauty reminds me of, in that order, Tenko, Angie, and Correkio.
Right. Oh my god, Maddie, you are so smart.
Wow.
We should have known. Because at this point, this is something I also observed. At this point, it feels like the people who have been dying, and I won't like say if this is a pattern moving forward, but up to this point, it feels like chapter two, we unlocked Ryoma and Karumi's research lab. And then in this chapter, we literally unlocked the three research labs of the people who all die in this chapter. So yeah. I'm like, you know, maybe we should have known that they were gonna die, but anyway. Yeah. And so that also is such a heavy like foreshadowing, I guess, of like that. But yeah, Maddie,
yeah,
you're smart girl.
One thing I'm also noticing about like a pattern with the victims in this game is it seems to be the people who are taking charge, like the leaders of the group, whether like voted on themselves or voted on just by like, you know, peers going to them for mentorship. Like, I mean, Kaede was a strong leader of the group. Rentaro was probably the most informed of the group, and I think that that put him in a role that people like looked up to. Karumi was absolutely a leader of the group. You know, like, and even in this one, Angie, like, it's people who everyone looks up to that like is just, I don't know, getting ended. I would not be wanting to like step up and take charge in chapter four, because, you know, the trend is bad. Yeah, I have notes about like just the rooms that we see, like people's research labs. I mean, we have Maki's room. We actually finally get to go in there. And Shuichi, I'm noticing he doesn't always say like maybe the most therapeutic thing to say. The thing that he says about Maki's room is, if Kurumi were here, she might have killed us all, in reference to all of the weapons that are on Maki's wall. And it's like, I know she's a murderer, but like, a lot of people cared about her, and maybe right after her very gruesome death, that's not the best thing to say, Shuichi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, he is so like, does not know what to say ever, like the right thing to say, you know what I mean? Like, no offense, Shuich, but it's true.
Yeah.
The other thing is, when we go, I mean, we explore Tenko and Angie's research labs and also Kurekiya's research lab, and we find a golden katana. A little familiar. Little something.
It does look familiar.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting little callback. There are a few in this chapter that happen from old games, but this was like, I was like, oh, okay, nice. Yeah. And it ends up being used in the murder, which is interesting. So
very true. Nice. Yeah, lots of callbacks specifically to chapter ones of the previous games. Yeah.
Yes, which is so interesting.
Yeah,
because of the stuff under the floorboards and the
glow paint.
Like, is it Tsumugi who makes a reference to glow paint?
I know. Like, I was like, oh my god,
glow dark paint. Like, oh
yeah. Even like the business with like, how did the locks open, like in Trigger Happy Havoc chapter one, you remember Makoto's lock was funky and you had to like jiggle it or whatever, and like in this one it was like, oh well, the lock can only enter from this way, and like, you know, this, that, and the other. Like, it's a lot of nods. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, that's really true. Yeah. And then we get to see Tenko beating everyone up.
I love her.
That was fun.
I have to share two things. So I played this chapter in our Discord server. I streamed it for patrons. And there was a joke that I made in chapter one of V3 where I said that Shuichi was bald, that when he took off the hat, he would also just lose his hair. And one of our patrons, Trina, was flipped by Tenko. She was like, his wig's gonna fall. It was so funny.
Oh, that's great. Do you have voice chat on when you do that?
Yeah,
that's so fun. I want to do that now. I love that.
I think it is so funny that Tenko's thing is like, if she flips someone over in combat, she like can see into their heart, you know, like she does that, and then she's like, ah, I can feel your emotions, Himiko, or like, Shuichi, you don't have enough confidence in yourself. Like, after she flips them, it's like the way that she like connects with them emotionally.
That's so true. So I didn't think about that.
I also liked in the back of her research lab the giant like structure. I thought it kind of reminded me of the Chuck E. Cheese like giant animatronic.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that, brother. Yeah. I also, as we're exploring in this, we stumble upon Mew and Kibo.
Mew doing some maintenance.
Yeah.
Kibo.
So
that's all that it was. Just doing maintenance.
Yeah.
So much that it can be said in silence, you know?
I know. It's and a lot of the things that come up in this chapter is just us gonna be like, being like, yep, that's what happened. this is what they wrote.
Speaking of, right after that, there's a meeting between like all the students, and Maki and Kaito aren't there. Which
interesting.
I think we've seen this film before.
Yeah, that's true. They're not there. Who knows what they're doing? No, I think they're just hanging out. I don't think it's anything spicy. But anyhow, yeah. And that's the scene where we figure out the motive yet? Or are we not even there yet?
I don't think we're there yet.
Okay, well, one thing, and this might be, they enter in later, right? The two of them, Kaito and Maki. Because Maki talks about how she kept her secret, like, in self-defense, like, because she knew if, like, someone knew, like, her talent, like, they might kill her. And, you know, I've played this chapter over the course of, like, 2 months, so I don't quite remember all these early moments as well, but, like, I seem to remember, like, people being like, oh no, like, if you were just honest with us, we would have accepted you. And it's like, no, I don't think that's true at all, actually. And I think Maki is quite smart in, like, and I trust her, like, lived experience that, like, perhaps she also, like, has experienced things like this before. Because, like, kind of like Toko in chapter 2 of Danganronpa 1, it's like, once people discover she's a serial killer, she almost becomes more of a target in a lot of ways, because, like, you know, they fear what she could do. Thankfully she doesn't, and I love her, and she's so beautiful, but that is something to definitely consider.
Definitely. My next note is more on why I think Marin's, at this point in the game, I'm thinking that Marin's theory about them being non-Earth is also my same theory. It just makes a lot of things make sense. Like, if they were on, like, a spaceship with, like, a huge kind of like a spaceship colony thing, because the stars don't look right, there's no bugs, Monokuma tells them they're the only people left in the world, like, it would make those things make sense. And it would also make a lot of their talents make sense, I think, because you have an astronaut, you have a maid who can take care of the place, you have an entomologist who can, like, colonize a new planet or whatever with insects, which are some of the most robust life forms ever. They have, like, for entertainment and morale, they have, like, a pianist and an artist and a magician. The anthropologist can maintain, like, the records and everything of humanity's history and where they've come from. An inventor who can build things, and a robot who can maybe do some things humans can't, like, you know.
Right, because he doesn't need air to breathe.
Spacewalk. Exactly. And it would also explain why the whole school was built for them specifically, and not just, like, ultimate students in general, because of their, like, specifically tailored research labs. So it would make a lot of things make sense. And so at this point in the game, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And that is what I think is being hinted at.
I could also argue that Shuichi's talent would provide a potential justice system. Like, he would definitely have some appreciation of, like, how to make a legal system in some capacity, right?
Yeah.
That's
true. Mm-hmm. Well, we have Training Squad back and complete now with Maki.
This is true.
And I love that she, like, is like, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. She, like, kicks their butts, and it's iconic. And I love it so much.
I actually have a meme for that for our episode art, which I will now send to you in our group message. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed making it.
Are we ready for the motive?
I have one more note before
the motive. Nice.
And it is Love Hotel. What the heck?
Oh, can we access the Love Hotel now?
I didn't even go over there.
I did.
Damn.
I did.
Oh my god.
You guys want to guess which character was my first one?
Correkio, obviously.
When I first played this game.
Mm-mm. Oh, wait. Oh, you mean in general.
Kibo.
Like when I first ever played this game, like, the first randomly assigned character I got.
Kibo.
Oh, no.
The scene I got.
Mm-mm. Was it Himiko?
It was Himiko.
Oh, God. That's the worst one. Oh, it's so bad. Yeah, big dislike for that.
Me too.
I just want to know why.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Why is this in the game?
It's so I have no words / any rationale for you on this day. All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break, but if you want more Ultra Hope Girls content, please check out our Patreon. The lowest tier is just $2 a month, and you get access to a bunch of cool bonus episodes, so definitely check us out there. And if you're able, please give us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. It really helps the podcast and helps people find us if there are other Danganronpa fans out there looking for a podcast. We're also on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. We're Ultra Hope Girls Podcast pretty much everywhere. and we're excited to see you there. We'll be right back after the break.
Anyway, motive time.
Motive time. So, okay. In replaying this chapter, so the motive we find out is that one of the old students will get resurrected. I think, this is my theory on, like, this motive and, like, the intention behind it. I don't think, obviously, that this is possible. Like, we never really know, right? We never really, like, no one ever goes through with it to, like, raise anyone from the dead. I think the real motive here is how, one, they're bringing up the very sensitive topic of death right after these people have experienced four very traumatic deaths, and then proposing sort of things that a lot of religions cover. So it's like the dead, where the dead go, all that, all these things. And religion and belief is a very dividing thing among people. And a lot of people react to these extreme subjects in very extreme ways. And so I think the true motive here isn't that we get to pick a student to come back from the dead. I think that this is purposeful to divide the group and almost show, I mean, this is very appropriate for the ultimate anthropologist, show like the anthropological implications of like when human beings start to question their morality in the sort of setting. It just feels very much like the motive is actually to divide the group and make people disagree with each other. Because up until this point, they've been quite unified, right? Even after the deaths that have happened, it feels, you know, everyone except like Kokichi, but LOL, you know, it's Kokichi, is like, okay, like we're working together, blah, 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 blah. And then this motive, it is specifically to play into the divide. And, you know, whatever is going on, there are people in this game that have very strong opinions at Angie about what happens when we die. And so it gives I think even Correkio says, like, these are the perfect conditions for a cult to form, because now we're talking about death head on as a theme. So that's my theory as to what this motive, like, is really supposed to be. I mean, who knows? Like, maybe, like, people could be raised from the dead and it could have been that. But I think, like, the intention wasn't that. I think it was just to create divide between the group. But please feel free to also share your thoughts. I just like felt very strongly. I was like, I need to talk about this because I think it's more this in replaying than anything else, even though I think it's kind of dumb still.
Like, well, I think that's a really good point for sure. I mean, obviously, I don't think that, like, you know, Monokuma could just go like resurrecting a dead person. Like, you know, there have to be some kind of limits
to Monokuma,
right, to this fictional world. Although, unless it was like another thing like game two where it was like a simulation, but I feel like they wouldn't use that twice in a row. You know what I mean? You never know.
I think, I mean, a part of me really wants it to have been possible, not just because like I want one of the characters back, but I just think it'd be so interesting. And like, to your point, Caroline, not only do they have to agree about the morality of the situation, but then you have to, let's say they all got on board. Let's say they got past all of those barriers, right? Who are they bringing back? Because, you know, Angie and the council, which we haven't really talked about yet, but they say it can't be one of the murderers. And so we're bringing back Rantaro, right? I think they chose Rantaro because he had info that we never really found out. And, yeah, but Shuichi, you think he would be okay not bringing Kaede back? You know, like, right. Kokichi, you think he's going to agree to not bring back the most chaotic, probably Kurumi? Like, it's just, yeah. There's so many ways that could go. And it's also, I think it was so interesting.
It's like placing like a bomb. It's like, it's so intentional. And again, that's why I really think the true motive here is this is a ploy to like divide and create conflict among the people involved. Yeah, it is. In replaying, I used to think I was like, oh, that motive is so dumb. I hate it so much. In replaying, and again, the themes explored in this chapter with like cult and how people react to death and like all these things, it makes sense to me more. And again, seeing the murderer, like literally the murderer does what he does because it's like an anthropological exploration in human behavior. Like, that is like, okay, like a lot of there's a lot of crap in this chapter, but that in particular I think is quite strong. So anyway, yeah,
one thought I did have, he never believes in the Necronomicon. He never believes in its ability, and he says that at the end, that he's like, you know, like, no, I never believed in that silly thing, like, blah blah blah, I just wanted to do the seance. But it's strange to me, because this chapter could have gone in a very different way if he did believe, because theoretically he could have brought back his sister. Let's say it worked, right? I mean, like, he could have done that if it had worked, and if he got everyone on board, which he probably wouldn't, because he would have been like, ah, I've killed, I don't know, 97 people, and I guess I can stop now. And they'd all be like, what the heck?
Oh my god. The theme of this chapter is just lost potential. There is so much potential for excellence in this chapter, and it is absolutely shattered. As soon as Seesaw is introduced, shattered.
Seesaw.
Yeah. Seesaw effect, excuse me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, not gonna lie. I had the note of like, how, when they first bring up the motive, when they're like, oh, it's gonna be a transfer student, and before they elaborate on like bringing back one of the dead students, I had the thought of like, how interesting would it be to introduce a new character in chapter 3 and be like, there, here's a transfer student, you know, like, or where are they from? Like, that, I feel like that would have been such an interesting dynamic. And I agree with you, Caroline. I feel like they have some like missed potential here, that like they really could have like gone, you know, and done some new things with this game that have not been done in game 1 or 2.
Yeah.
And I was like kind of hoping they would, but they did not.
I could have brought back someone from game 1 or 2. That could be the transfer. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they could, or just even like a new character, or like even if they did bring back Rantaro, I just feel like that would have been so interesting to explore that dynamic of like having someone come back, or like having a new person, that I'm like,
yeah,
they just didn't.
One of the things, when I was playing in our Discord, Tyler, one of our patrons, he said that he wished that Correkio had only killed Tanko. Wait, is that right? Yeah. He wished that Correkio had only killed Tanko and not Angie, because then he wouldn't have been blamed for, or he wouldn't have been punished by Monokuma because of the first come, first serve rule. And then to see how the students would have had to live with him, like just deal with it, like a known murderer who had no retribution. Right. And like,
I had that same thought. Yes. Like, that would have been so interesting to explore that dynamic, to just be like, oh, this murderer, we know they killed someone and they got away with it, and
because they're just still around. Again, it is brought up as an option. And Maddie and I, when we played it, we were like, oh, this is interesting, because like the moral implications and like blah blah blah. And literally, again, flop. Like, just totally not even relevant. And that is like, God, that could have like totally changed the game. And like, so Nezumi VA, I watched her like little recap. I always do whenever we record now, because I just feel like she has a lot of things to say. And something that she mentioned in her video is how neat it would have been to like, if basically like Correkio had set it up so Himeko was the one who accidentally killed Tenko or something, like, you know what I mean? So it's she would be alive, but then dealing with like the, again, like the guilt of doing it, even though it was an accident, you know, and just like things like that, just like,
yeah.
But then wouldn't Himeko then be the black end? Because remember, like, with Nagito, and he set it up so that like other people killed him.
Exactly. And then Correkio would still be alive, I think is what she said. Like, Correkio would be the one who lives. And how interesting would that be?
Or you could have had Tanko kill Angie out of like a jealousy, like, I have to stop this council thing. And then when Correkio kills Tanko, now you have no blackened. Like, for the first time, no blackened.
No blackened. That's so true.
Unless that would have been transferred. Oh my gosh.
We just came up with three alternative writings for this chapter that are better than what we got. So, and we are a couple of mid-20s silly guys. So I don't know.
We do be doing
that.
You know what's another interesting dynamic that I feel like could have been explored at some point is someone brings up the idea that maybe Tenko killed Angie and then Angie's ghost killed Tenko. It's like they basically killed each other. Right. And I think, like, obviously, like, not like Angie's ghost killing Tenko, but how interesting would it be if, like, someone, let's say, like, Angie, like, poisoned Tenko and it was like a slow acting poison or something. And then Tenko killed Angie and then died of Angie's poison later. Like, and they actually did kill each other. And then there was also no Blacken. Like, there's a lot of like
missed opportunity.
There's a lot of like different directions they could have gone with this rather than just having like, well, I guess in game one, they technically did have Celeste didn't kill both of the victims, but she orchestrated it all.
It's true.
And they kind of spun it that way where it's like the person who is the brains behind the whole operation is the Black End.
Right.
But in this one, they were explicitly like Angie's killer is the Black End. There's so much mispotential.
I know. It is just, yeah, it's rough. Oh man. Well, yeah. Do we want to talk about the cult now?
Real quick.
I think we should.
Real quick about Necronomicon, the process for like bringing a body back. I just really love that the effigy does not have to be shaped like the person. Like Angie does a great job. Like, wow, those things are lifelike. But it could be literally a blob that you write a name on.
I know.
And that works.
And that would be fine. That would pass the test. I just love for the that. Spirits. I know, it is so funny.
The spirits.
See, and the other thing that does is it also opens it up to someone other than Angie initiating the ritual. Because if it does have to be lifelike, then Angie, as a sculptor, is the only one who is capable of really doing that. Also, can I just say, our girl is talented because...
Oh my god.
I don't think that there are any photos or let alone models or anything for her to have gone off of to make those four people, but she did it like exactly correct with their faces and their heights and their everything. Like she did that from memory. Like that's incredible.
That's so true. Wow.
Yeah, that is really true. I didn't even think about that. Oh man.
Yeah.
But speaking of Angie, we have the Cult of Atua, baby. The Academy Student Council. Which is, I think, a little rushed. I wish there was some, like, foreshadowing before, like, maybe one person joins the cult in chapter one, and then maybe one in chapter two, and then, you know, so it's, like, a little more progression, instead of just everyone is like, yes, this is it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and she literally just, like, hugs people, and then they convert.
I kind of love that. Her hugs are so good that everyone's like, wow, she's blessed. Oh my god. But yeah, and it is this again had so much potential. I think that the whole idea of like a group of people thinking that they have inherently more like power over others based on their belief is just an interesting theme that again is explored in this chapter, and I really like how it is, but I wish it was like we saw inklings of it a little earlier, you know, than now. Oh my god, and then when she smashes the flashback light, I actually like forgot that happened, and I was like, oh my god, you know what I mean? I was like, I can't believe she did that. Like, oh, it's so good.
What's really interesting about that is the flashback, I feel like, very closely aligns with the idea of the council, in that she makes a choice to destroy the flashback light without letting anybody else kind of say anything. And, you know, like whether they should be participating in Monokuma's flashback lights or not, you know, like you could see them as potentially like a motive. It's not really Angie's choice to make that choice for everyone. And she does. And I feel like the student council kind of does the same thing at times where they're like, you can no longer have these choices because we say so. And it's not quite fair. Yeah.
Nice. Oh my god. I love Angie is dead. I'm really good at taking notes. Yeah. Well, I have Shuichi also, and I really like this moment too, and I want to mention it. Shuichi like tells Angie, you know, when she's looking to like perform this ritual, that like a soul can't be replicated. And I that was a very interesting idea. Like, if the person came back, would it really be that person, or would it be like that? Just again, this whole idea of like what resurrection would mean. Is it like resurrection, like they would it would literally be them, like by magic or something, like coming back? But yeah, anyway, yeah, just a soul not being able to be replicated. I was like, yeah, word.
That's so much like the Black Mirror episode Be Right Back, if you've seen that.
Yes.
It's yes. So good. Oh, also, there's a new season of Black Mirror coming out, so prepare for me to be unreasonable. It's so good. But yeah, it's basically an episode where a woman's husband dies and she basically mail orders him back. It's like a copy of him, and AI produces like a similar speech pattern and ideas and whatnot, and how that progresses, like, you know, classic Black Mirror.
You know what is the scariest thing about that episode to me is how potentially realistic the beginning of it is, because she doesn't order the like mannequin AI guy right away. It starts out with her just texting. It's like this AI program that she's just texting him and like talking to him, and then she decides to like take the next step and like, oh my god, like that with everything now about like ChatGPT and like all that crap, like I gotta be honest, like I'm probably gonna sound like a boomer, but that technology,
it freaks me
scares
out,
scares me. It really does. I don't like it, and I don't think, I think that at some point we say, let's stop developing that. Like, this is progress? No.
I know.
Angie's dead.
Angie's dead, and Correkio's like, time for a seance, which I guess I can all bring this up now. Why? Why did he decide to go through with the seance plan? Because if he had just left Angie alone, they would probably not have figured out it was him, because the duct tape, like the essential piece of evidence that like of her death, is under the floorboard of a random room that no one is going to check, because nothing happened in there. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, but okay.
He wanted more friends for his sister.
However, if he gotten away with murder, he would have had even more friends for his sister.
That's true, because everyone would have died, and he knew he was going to die anyways. I don't know that he sees much value in life after he gets 100 friends for his sister. You know?
Right. Yeah. Right.
That's like his whole life purpose.
Yeah.
Also, just the fact, can we just talk about the fact that like, that's a lot of women.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of women.
Who has 100 friends?
I don't. I have like 3.
No, I know. And I have 2, and they're in the Zoom call right now. Like, that's it.
That's a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, like, how do you get away with committing murder that many times?
He does a lot of seances. He's in a club, actually.
But also, okay, also, what if everyone had just like refused to do the seance? What if he was like, ah, yes, we should do a seance to communicate with the spirits of the dead, and they're all just like, no thanks.
He would literally, yeah, and nothing, he would happened. Stand in one of the rooms with that board and just whack people as they came in.
Right, because if he just killed everybody, he could have done that. Little guy. Anyway, but
he did not want to kill Mew or Maki, because they wouldn't have been good friends for his sister.
That's true. Maybe that's the reason. He didn't want any bad, quote-unquote, influences. Oh, it's also very sexist to imply that his sister could only have female friends.
Female friends. No, it's so true.
Right, like, what's up with that?
Speaking of serial killers. So, this whole time, I can't help but think that up to this point in the game, I couldn't help but think that Maki is like kind of a little bit of a like ripoff of Pekko from game 2. But in this chapter, we find out that Maki's not a ripoff of Pekko, because Maki doesn't use swords.
True. I know, that is so true. I also really love in particular in this chapter, I think this is really the only time we get to see this, but like, since Kaito is so down for the count, unfortunately, and we kind of find out why at the end of this chapter, it's like you sort of get to see Maki and Shuichi's like friendship and her investigating with him without Kaito, which I kind of like. Just, I don't know, I think it's a good moment to just see them being pals and bonding and stuff.
I like their friendship a lot,
because believe it or not, men and women can be friends.
What?
Crazy.
What?
I know. Seriously? You heard it here first.
I know.
See, I'm bi, so I'm not allowed to have any
friends. No friends for Maddie.
No.
Oh, man.
Okay. And then another thing that I had a thought. Is this, like, probably isn't the case, but I couldn't help but wonder if Correggio wrote the Cage Child seance, like, sequence himself. Because, like, it is just too perfect. It's so convenient with the way that he sets it up for him to commit murder with it. And he also has, like, he says he has the whole thing memorized, which would make sense if it came from his own brain. Like,
right.
It's just so perfect. It's like, oh, okay, well, it has to be in the dark, it has to be in an enclosed room, it has to be a woman, they have to lay down in this position with their head like this, and they have to have this heavy cage that's covered with a thing on top of them, like, it, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's so perfect that it makes me wonder if he made that up himself and just like wrote into a book.
Like, right, I mean, diary. It could be that. I know.
What's that?
It's like it's his diary. Yeah. Dear diary, step one.
Step one, draw a circle of salt. Oh my
maybe
God.
He wrote the song too. I don't know.
I hope he did. That song, did you read the lyrics? Like, it's like, will she survive? Like, come on.
I know. It doesn't feel like, oh my God, I know. It's so weird. What was I going to say? Oh, the other thing that I have, I think it's a plot hole, and I'm going to call it out because the chapter sucks booty, is how did, okay, so in theory, when Correggio, like, put the sheet on, he, like, placed the scythe, like, on top somehow, like, under the sheet, just logistically speaking, how are you doing that without like being obvious about it? Like, I'm just gonna be real. There's like no way. And then wouldn't there be like a little wooden rod on the top that you could like see through the sheet? Like, anyway, Marin has an idea.
I actually have the answer. Yeah. So, I don't know if you guys have been playing the new Zelda game, Tears of the Kingdom, but there's an ability in it where you can fuse materials to other materials and then just unfuse it when you're done. That's what he did.
Love it.
Yeah.
Answered.
It's actually like a little known fact.
The TikToks I have seen coming out of that game are incredible. Like that game is like a free builder, do whatever the hell you want. Like, just incredible.
It's like Scribblenauts meets like, I don't even know. It's something.
I'm so excited to get it.
Why? Okay, but a question though. Why is everyone torturing and killing the Koroks? What did they do?
I saw a TikTok where this guy was like, in Breath of the Wild, there's 900 Koroks. And he did like a 100% completion of the game. And so he had to listen to the Koroks go, yeah, 900 times.
900 times.
That was too many times.
That was one too many. That's funny.
Oh my God, just like the things I've seen. Oh wow.
Yeah,
nice. Yeah,
anyway, yeah, I agree with you, Caroline. That's a little, it would have like, it would, yeah, you're right, it would have like been partially visible through the sheet if it was just sitting on top. Like, it would have made a sound probably if he was clinging it through the hole. Like, people would have seen it. It's like, how do you...
I know.
What's worse to me is that the theory came up that maybe she died after the cage was lifted. like that maybe you remember in like the investigation, or maybe it was like start of the trial, they were like, well, maybe she wasn't quite dead yet. It's like, were we looking at the same person? Like, she is like curled up silent with a pool of blood around her, but no, it didn't happen yet. Like,
what? She could have died. I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll bring up is, okay, seesaw effect. Okay. If it were an animation of like a foot going down with the other foot on level ground, like, a, you know, and then I would be like, this is fine. This makes sense. If I totally jumped onto a board like that, I would fall. Like, there is no way that like, how are you? Like, this isn't an actual seesaw, my friend. Like, there's no one on the other side to lift you up. You know what I mean? So it's like, you are going to fall down.
There's also like a, what was it? 100-pound cage and dog and sheet and human on the other side. So if you're right. Telling me that he could like not only equal that, but be more and put a board that was sitting on a rectangular plank, right? And have that defy physics. Go down onto other matter, but matter doesn't have to stay still anymore.
No.
Well, I will say that the way that it was like the board, like the cage and the dog didn't move. It was like just Tenko inside the cage.
Which doesn't make sense though, still.
I don't physically think
No.
Can we get
that doesn't make sense because like the oh gosh, I think even in the diagram, like the fulcrum of the lever, that one middle rod is like not perfectly aligned with the cage. Unless it was perfectly aligned with the cage would hold the whole thing
exactly
down.
Right.
So also I have an issue with this as well. Did Shuichi deadass say 175 pounds is roughly the weight of two girls?
I was like, what? That's not right at all.
I weigh 155 pounds.
Well,
and
girls,
I am one girl.
You're not a girl. You're a woman.
I'm a woman. But like...
Ultra hope women.
But I also like... When I was like 17... Ultra hope women.
Ultra hope women.
I was like 17. I'm pretty sure I weighed at least like 140 pounds.
Yeah.
And like...
Well, he could have meant like girls as in like tweens, you know, it could have been like a 10-year-old girl.
Why does he know that though? I don't want Shuichi
to know the
weight of tweens.
That's so scary.
I just have an issue with it.
Yeah.
That would mean that the girls are less than 90 pounds. That's like
a big issue with that.
And we can't all be Angela from The Office.
Right.
I only weigh 82 pounds. That's a classic.
Now Himiko potentially is that small, but like Tenko, actually we can look up their weights, can't we?
Oh, so smart.
Tenko Chabashira,
maybe card. He meant two Himikos,
maybe he went or like two little girls, like 2-3-year-old girls. Yeah, okay, Tenko weighs 115 pounds.
No. No, she doesn't.
Which still seems too small.
Yeah.
And then Himiko weighs 86 pounds.
Okay, so it's two Himikos confirmed.
It's two Himikos.
God in heaven, this is craziness.
Yeah, but no. Danganronpa definitely has an issue with like
the body purport. Like,
underestimating the weight of women. Yeah.
Anyway. This is so crazy. Nice.
Another angle that could have been explored and wasn't was a triple murder. What if Kokichi actually had died?
Oh my god.
I need you guys to know, this is gonna be to the surprise of literally no one, that when I left that room and the music started playing and I saw him lying on the ground, my heart stopped. Like when we played it for the first time, I literally was like, no. I was so sad.
And then he goes, it's a lie. And then I was like, you motherfucker. Like, he is so awful. And in the this entire chapter in the trial. He is terrible, and I love him so much, but he is horrible.
I love him though, and it's like I don't like pranks. I'm not a prank person, but that is the funniest thing I've ever seen. Like, he's like off investigating and he hits his head really hard and he's like, what's the best way I can mess with people? Like,
I know. And he's like, I'm gonna pretend to be dead.
It's so messed up. Oh my gosh.
And I love that he's like, I've got a migraine. I like, ow, like I'm injured. Like, this
he has a traumatic brain injury.
Literally.
Just,
he's got like concussed.
He's got like, I know, he's got like intracranial swelling. And everyone's just like, huh. Like, no one even like bats an eyelash at the fact that he's like severely injured.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, Kokichi. He just like walks away. Mm-hmm. Oh my god. So my last note before the trial is just seriously the summary of like the little summary of the characters they give before the trial, the people who died. Henko's summary per Shuichi literally is just, she hated men, but I know that she hated this terrible killing game even more. That's all you have to say about her.
Shuichi stays not saying the right thing at the right time.
Oh my god.
My gosh.
That's just so ridiculous to me.
That is anyway. Very ridiculous. All right, everyone. That wraps up part one of our chapter 3 V3 episode. We have had such a good time talking about it so far. We're not even done yet. We got to get to the trial and, of course, our spoiler full notes. So we will definitely be back. I guess that's not a surprise. But we will be back in 2 weeks with our next episode, and we're so excited to keep sharing more of this incredible game with you all. If you're interested in hearing even more Danganronpa content, we have a Patreon, and we've got a bunch of really cool episodes. We reference them a lot on here, and if you're looking to get some more content from us, that is a great way to do so. Lowest tier is just $2 a month. And if you're interested in any of the game nights that Caroline had mentioned earlier, that's about $10 a month. And we'd love to see you there. It's a great time. If you're looking to help out the Ultra Hope Girls in another way, a really quick way to do it is to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps. It brings it back up into the feed for other people to get to check out the podcast. And make sure you keep sharing with your friends. And that's about it. We'll be back in a couple weeks.
Bye.
Bye.